I'm Mark Simpson, and this is Intersection. Most people think of South Florida when they visit the Everglades, but now the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is working to create a national wildlife refuge and conservation area in Central Florida that would protect the headwaters of the River of Grass. We'll talk with two experts on the project. And we'll update a story on solar energy in Florida. Plus, last year's earthquake in Haiti left more than 1 million people homeless. We'll talk with Orlando hotel owner Harris Rosen about his effort to provide low-cost housing for Haitians. Those conversations ahead on Intersection. Historically, the Everglades were a slow-moving river that began in central Florida with the Kissimmee River, and that river flowed into Lake Okeechobee, which moved further into the Everglades, which eventually emptied out into the Gulf of Mexico and Florida Bay. Today, the Kissimmee River meanders through remote parts of cattle ranches and protected lands. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service wants to preserve these lands as part of the Everglades Headwaters National Wildlife Refuge and Conservation Area. I'm joined by Charlie Palizza, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Coordinator of the project. Charlie, good to have you with us.
It's good to be here today.
Also with us in studio is Keith Fountain, Central Florida's Director of Land Protection for the Nature Conservancy. Good to have you here, Keith.
It's good to be here. Thank you.
So I figured let's start off by talking about where this area actually is and in relation to what we traditionally think of as the central part of the Everglades, Charlie Palizza. This is a little bit removed from South Florida, which everyone kind of has in their head as a mental picture of the Everglades.
Yes. The project area that we're talking about lies directly below Orlando. It runs all the way down to Lake Okeechobee. To the west, we have the Lake Wales Ridge. And on the east side, it's the boundary between the St. John's River watershed and the Kissimmee River watershed, which is basically the Florida's Turnpike and Route 441.
So, Keith Fountain, why is this area important, then, for the Everglades, if it does seem a little bit removed from that central core that we think of in South Florida when we talk about that ecosystem?
This landscape is actually the headwaters of the greater Everglades ecosystem. People that are driving east along the Beachline Expressway sometimes will see a sign at Shingle Creek that says this is the headwaters of the Everglades. And indeed, that's the case. The landscape that we're talking about today, we at the Nature Conservancy often say it starts at the Disney Wilderness Preserve, which is a 12,000-acre mitigation project on the north side of Lake Hatchnaha, south of Kissimmee. And from there, flows down the Kissimmee River towards Lake Okeechobee.
So the Nature Conservancy already has some protected lands in this area. Why the effort to expand it?
Well, the Nature Conservancy, of course, is an international nonprofit conservation organization. And in Florida, we've been working for 50 years across large landscapes in Florida, like the Northern Everglades. And we've amassed properties that we own and manage in these landscapes. In this particular instance, we own several properties, but this is a vast landscape of large cattle ranches that have been extremely well managed for many generations. And unknown to many Floridians, this is also a landscape that has tremendous diversity of plants and animals. And it's thanks to the stewardship of these ranchers that we have these species, and that's the landscape that this refuge will focus on.
Charlie Palizza with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife, why the sudden interest in protecting this headwater area? What has changed that has pushed forward this drive to protect this particular habitat now?
Well, I think a couple of things have changed. One is the realization by the Fish and Wildlife Service that there are some resource values, the ones that Keith just described, that are in need of conservation because there are threats to the landscape. We're currently in a downturn in the economy, but as soon as the economy does rebound, we find that there's a lot of interest in development in this area for commercial and residential development. And if you look at the larger landscape and you look at some of the species like Florida panther and Florida black bear that need wide habitats to range across, we just want to make sure that there's habitat available for them that is currently conserved so that they have places to roam as they will.
And help me to understand, we think of the Everglades as that slow-moving body of water that kind of ebbs down through the state of Florida. How much water is actually flowing down into the Lake Okeechobee area from this northernmost part of the Everglades that we have here in Central Florida?
Well, the watershed north of Lake Okeechobee is probably a couple million acres in size. And so a lot of the water that falls on Lake Wells Ridge and the water that falls in the Orlando area all flows down into Lake Okeechobee. So it's a vast area where all that water flows down south.
And I think it's interesting. I've looked at some of the maps of this proposed protected area, Keith Fountain, and it seems that there are parcels that are split. It's not all contiguous. And so how does that impact the actual flow of water that moves through the land down towards the Lake Okeechobee area?
Well, since the middle or early part of the last century, agriculture and the government ditched and drained many of these wetlands. And, of course, that's what we in the state of Florida and the federal government have been trying to redress or address over the last 10-plus years. Many people are familiar with Kissimmee River restoration. Other agencies are taking it to another level and are now starting to look at the restoration of these ranches. As Charlie had alluded to, you know, the state and other government agencies, there are some really fantastic public lands out there already, like the Three Lakes Wildlife Management Area, which is on the northeast side of this proposed project, and Kissimmee Prairie State Preserve. But it's working with these ranchers and protecting that habitat, and in some cases, other agencies are doing hydrological restoration. That's where we will truly be able to preserve a large functional landscape for future generations. And it'll be that functional landscape that provides us with the wildlife and the water and the clean air that the residents of Florida will need.
How are things going to change when this becomes a protected area from what its current status is today?
Well, I think the really great thing that the Fish and Wildlife Service is doing with this refuge is the last two words of the name, which is conservation area. And two-thirds of this is proposed to be conservation easements on these working cattle ranches. So these lands will remain in private ownership, but the habitat values that Charlie's been talking about, those will be protected in perpetuity. And that's important. And it's also important that it helps sustain these cattle ranching operations, because it's the care and stewardship of these families for many generations. That's the reason we as conservationists like that landscape today. And the funds that they get through these transactions will sustain their operations into the future.
Charlie Palizza, is that a little bit of a change in the way the U.S. government has traditionally approached conservation, trying to not just buy out the lands outright?
The use of conservation easements in this part of Florida is certainly unique and very new for the Fish and Wildlife Service. It is, however, a tool or a technique that we use in the mid-continent in the Prairie Pothole region quite often and very successfully. The Fish and Wildlife Service has a long tradition of working with agricultural interests to make sure that they stay on the landscape, because that is where most of the habitat for these wildlife species occur. And in working with them and making sure that they maintain their place in the landscape, we're better able to protect larger landscapes. So we took that idea and that concept from the central portion of the country, and we brought it here to Central Florida, and we're hoping to make it work here as well.
You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 WMFE-FM. I'm Mark Simpson. I'm talking with Charlie Palizza, who is the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service coordinator for the new proposed Everglades Headwater National Wildlife Refuge and Conservation Area. I also have in studio Central Florida's Director of Land Protection for the Nature Conservancy. That's Keith Fountain. Talk to me a little bit, Charlie, about the economics of doing this, because right now the economy is down, and that, of course, means that money is scarce, but also it has the effect that land values have gone down, so land is cheap. Now's a good time to try to get land, but there's not a lot of money out there to do that. So was that part of the approach in choosing to go with the conservation easements?
Well, that's the paradox, is that right now it is a very good time to buy, but it's also a time where there is scarce money. And certainly by utilizing conservation easements, it certainly makes the conservation dollars go a little bit further. But it's really the idea of using conservation easements, the intent is to make sure that the landscape stays as it is today into the future. We don't want to see any changes. It's a very useful tool to maximize the dollars that are available for conservation, but also protect the resource values and the economy of the local community.
Keith Fountain, do you see also money playing a role in the approach to trying to protect these lands right now, especially given the downturn in the economy?
I don't think dollars per se were the primary decision behind the conservation easements. As Charlie alluded to, I think it's a desire to keep the good stewards on the land that have been there for many generations. Again, that's the reason the conservation community is attracted to this landscape. There's no doubt about it that right now the opportunities are unprecedented to protect conservation land in this state. And conservation easements do stretch that dollar further.
You know, take me inside that relationship with the cattle owners, because, of course, many people don't realize if they're just driving through Florida, going to the parks and the beaches at the exterior edges of the state, that the central part, there's a lot of agriculture going on there. Cattle ranching has a long history in Florida. But it's also interesting, if you think about it, that you're using cattle ranchers who, do have contributions to pollutants in the ecosystem and farming and that sort of thing. There's been always kind of this tension between conservationists and agricultural interests in the state, but now they're working together. Is there any concern that maintaining the ranches on those lands is in some way degrading them?
These ranchers have the same sensitivity to these issues, I think, that the conservation community and the other residents of Florida do. The really nice thing about the landscape that's being targeted by the Fish and Wildlife Service is that we're talking really about some of the larger family-owned operations that have been in Florida for many generations. And these ranchers are excellent stewards of the land. They watch their water, they monitor their wildlife, because all of this has value to them, not only personally, but economically as ranchers. So it is something where the Nature Conservancy and the ranching community and the other conservation organizations and the government agencies can work hand in hand towards the common conservation goals.
Charlie Palizza, is that a different approach you find dealing with ranchers on these lands than, for instance, further south in the state when you deal with big sugar growers who have been known to be adding all kinds of nutrients into the water system as it flows through the ecosystem?
Well, I think it's... It's a good question. I haven't worked with any of the big landowners, the sugar companies down south. I think one of the things that's really attractive in this area, and one of the things that we're hoping to do, is to work with the ranching community on restoring some of the habitats that may have had some drainage on the landscape, thereby holding some of the water back so that it doesn't enter the river system as quickly as it does currently, so that the distribution, the timing of the water entering the system will buffer the effects of floods and droughts. In addition, by the restorations that we hope to accomplish, we'll be able to hold the water on the landscape and let wetlands do the things that they do well, and that's trap the nutrients and use them to build new plant growth so that it doesn't enter the water column and impact the system further south.
Keith, I do want to ask that question to you also. Is this a different level of engagement with the cattle ranches as opposed to dealing with some of the bigger agriculture producers further south in the Everglades lands?
Well, like Charlie, I haven't personally dealt with the agricultural interests south of Lake Okeechobee. The Nature Conservancy, historically, while we've been strong supporters of SERP, which, of course, is the restoration south of the lake, our focus has been on the landscape north of the lake because that's where you've got the habitat qualities as well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So tell me a little bit about, I guess, more what the ranchers will be doing with their lands and in terms of the water that's actually on it and how that ends up flowing through the ecosystem. They are getting some money for their participation, right, in these conservation easements. So in some way, are we talking about money for farming water?
Well, you can, and there's a number of agencies and programs that will work with ranchers to hold back water on the landscape. But in essence, those people that are familiar with the Everglades know that, again, back in the last century, when we ditched and drained this landscape, when you got a high water event, water pulsed down the system into Lake Okeechobee, and to address the strain that put on the lake in terms of water elevations, they then dumped it out the east and west side into estuaries on the coast, and which was very damaging to the quality of those estuaries. When agencies work with ranchers on this water equation, you're very simply plugging ditches and restoring the hydrological function of these wetland system. When you get a high water event, you're holding that water on the landscape longer. It's taking longer for that water to get down to Lake Okeechobee, so you're reducing the likelihood that it has to be dumped in emergency fashion out to the coast. And the programs that work with ranchers on this do it very successfully. And I think the other point is that this is an important part of the overall equation to provide water to the residents of South Florida, and just as important as it is to construct structures south of Lake Okeechobee.
You know, we're talking about this deal, and it sounds like it is moving forward, but it still does have to be approved through Congress, and this, of course, a difficult economy. Is this being considered, Charlie Pulizza, do you know, in Washington, D.C., since this would be involved with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers? Is this an earmark? And in this non-earmark environment, what does that say about the prospects of it being successful?
Well, the quick answer is this is not an earmark. This is an administrative process that we're currently in the middle of. We're currently holding public meetings to look at the draft documents. Once that document is finalized, it will go up to our Fish and Wildlife Service director for approval or not. And it's at that point that the refuge would become established. The refuge would become authorized. This is a long-term commitment. We don't anticipate that funding for this proposal would come in 1, 2, 10, or even 20 years. This is our promise to the people of Florida and the country that we see this as a very suitable project, something that we want to spend a lot of time on, and we're in it for the long haul. Regarding the funding itself, there are several funding sources that we might be able to use, and the primary one that we would be using for this project is the Land and Water Conservation Fund. And these funds are derived from the sale of leases for offshore oil and gas development.
Hmm.
It's a fund that's specifically developed and held in trust for the acquisition of conservation lands throughout the United States. Now, Congress does have to approve the use of those funds for conservation purposes, but those funds are dedicated for the use for conservation lands. They're applied for by multiple agencies throughout the country, and it's a competitive nature of that. You state your case for the project, and if it's found suitable, then the funding comes that way.
So do I hear you saying then, Charlie, that it looks pretty likely this will go through, not much that looks like it could derail it at this point?
We're certainly very hopeful and feeling very positive about the likelihood of this being approved, yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's also a part of this, creating this conservation area, that will give people access to the lands. It's not going to be restricted access, as I understand. There could be some hunting and perhaps other recreational uses?
Mm-hmm. We talked about earlier that two-thirds of this project is designed specifically to work with the existing landowners, but there's a third of the project, about approximately 50,000 acres, that we're hoping to purchase in fee title, just purchase it outright. And on those properties, we would be able to offer the opportunities for increased hunting and fishing opportunities for the public. We see some tremendous trail use here in Central Florida by equestrians, hikers, and bikers, and the ability to connect some of those trails that have missing links currently is another opportunity we're looking forward to. The other part of this is that the current administration has an initiative, the America's Great Outdoors Initiative, where we're real interested in getting people out of their households, away from their computers and their televisions and their Blackberries, and engage in the outdoors and look at these landscapes that are working landscapes and engage and get outdoors. So we see that as a tremendous opportunity with this proposal as well.
Keith Fountain, what do you think are people downstream going to see in terms of an influence of having these lands protected? Are they going to see that they're getting cleaner water, or is the water maybe even going to taste better? Or what's a visible impact that people elsewhere in the state are going to feel from protecting these lands?
I think the visible impact will be perhaps 20, 50, 100 years from now. Charlie earlier made the comment, he talked about this being a suitable project for the residents of Florida, and I think you, Mark, were alluding to the public hearing process that this has been going through. What I've been telling people is this project is important for all Floridians that care about this landscape in Central Florida. It doesn't matter whether you're a conservationist, a rancher, or a sportsman, or whether you just like big, wide, green vistas, or you really care about your fresh water or your fresh air. The visibility will be in the future at some point in time, because we've seen growth in Florida. We've seen how it's fragmented, these large landscapes. And what is so interesting, when you look at this area, the greater northern Everglades, which really goes, again, from the Disney Wilderness Preserve down and around the west side of Lake Okeechobee, this is an area that's almost twice the size of Yellowstone. And it's not all locked up in public ownership. It's got a lot of these fantastic cattle ranches, and it's got agricultural operations. So this is a place where the big animals can roam in the future, and we can get our food and our water and our clean air.
I've been speaking with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's Charlie Palizza. He is the coordinator to help create the Everglades Headwaters National Wildlife Refuge and Conservation Area. We're also joined by Keith Fountain, who is Central Florida's Director of Land Protection for the Nature Conservancy. Guys, great to speak with you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And now an update on a previous intersection conversation. In late August, we reported that National Solar Power, a Melbourne-based company, was considering Osceola County as one of several locations in Florida for a $1.5 billion solar farm. Turns out the final location chosen was Gadsden County, west of Tallahassee. Better luck next time. Where do you think the best part of the state is for solar power in Florida? Tell us on the WMFE Facebook and Twitter pages. Up next, new homes for Haiti. This is Intersection on 90.7. I'm joined by Orlando hotel magnate Harris Rosen. His little Haiti House project is aimed at providing low-cost homes for Haitians who were displaced by the big earthquake. Harris, thanks for being here.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
So I understand you were in Haiti just a few weeks ago, and we've checked in with you over the course of time and trying to find out what is the progress on this little Haiti House project. Well, what did you experience when you were in Haiti, and how has progress been going on this effort?
We visited Haiti a number of times and have had wonderful conversations with well-intentioned, terrific not-for-profits. And I guess the Catholic Church, Archbishop Wenske, who was here in Orlando for a time and is now stationed in Miami and Haiti, heard what we were planning, got in touch with us, visited us with another archbishop from representing the Vatican, Archbishop Alza, and they visited us. They enjoyed our vision and invited us to Haiti to show us a 60-acre site that they would give to us for us to build our homes. When we visited the area not long ago, we were overjoyed to see that the church had begun in earnest developing the infrastructure for our village. That is, they had developed a very large fish pond and had placed tilapia and carp in the pond. They had started construction on a farm component and had, in addition, planted trees and a multitude of other products, papaya and mangoes and coconuts and bananas, had, in addition, created a little clinic and a school. And what they wanted of us was to complement this first part of our little Haiti House Village concept with homes. We are now in the process of moving panels, which will be manufactured in Dominican Republic and shipped via flatbed truck. It's a 3-hour trip from Dominican Republic to Hench, which is where the 60 acres is,
mm-hmm.
to build the first model home.
So you're building the materials for the houses in Dominican Republic, shipping them into Haiti, and you're at this stage right now where you're building the trial house. I know you had talked about wanting to experiment, have people live in the house back here in Florida, and then you gradually, that idea evolved for you to have folks live in it actually in Haiti. So where would you say you are in the process of getting those houses running, actually having families lived in it, and how long do you think until completion?
Okay. It is one model house. The Catholic Church will select a family, a mom and a dad and 2, 3, or 4 children. The homes are completely designed. All of the accoutrements are already available. That is the sink and the toilet and the shower and the lighting. All of that we have on hand, and we are preparing a container, which we will a pack full of all of the things we need for the first little Haiti house, and that will be shipped from Port-au-Prince. It's a 2-hour ride from Port-au-Prince to Hench. Simultaneously, the panels that are being manufactured in Dominican Republic will be shipped from Dominican Republic, 3-hour trip to Hench. My hope and my prayer is that within 60 days, the first little house will be up, a family will be living in it, and they will be ready to provide us with a critique, which we will receive in person as we travel there after the house is completed and the family has an opportunity to live there for a while.
And so if that is a success, Harris, what do you anticipate would be the time frame for building out the whole village, which I understand could be as many as 150 houses?
That's correct. We can... I think, depending upon the quality of the acreage, and we've been there, and we think it's really it's not only beautiful, but we think it lends itself quite nicely to the kind of structure that we're contemplating. Three homes per acre, giving us 180 homes, it is certainly a reasonable anticipation. I suspect that 120 to 150 is what we'll do. And we did have a wonderful opportunity to meet with President Martelly at the airport when we visited Haiti, who expressed to us excitement and interest in our project, hoping that we would succeed in doing Village 1, Village 2, et cetera, and who indicated a willingness to help us. So, yes, the long-term dream is for us to build dozens, if not hundreds, of little Haiti house villages throughout Haiti, of course improving as we go along the homes and the villages, adding to the villages things that we're told are necessary. We are, of course, excited about this project. We, as I said, have been to Haiti doing a multitude of things for the past 15 to 20 years, and this is by far our boldest endeavor.
I've been speaking with Orlando hotel owner Harris Rosen. He aims to provide low-cost homes for earthquake-displaced Haitians through his Little Haiti House project. Harris, thanks so much for talking with us.
Oh, so happy, and let's all pray that we can make this happen.
The conversation about what's happening in Florida continues online at the Florida Talks blog. Visit WMFE.org/intersection to find out more. There you can also sign up for our weekly podcast. Support for Intersection comes from our listeners. Amy Green is the assistant producer. I'm Mark Simpson, and thanks for listening.